your husband is probably a creature of creative excess. Now, I want to know what kind of discipline you bring to the performance in one of his films as an actress, if that isn't too heavy a question to start with.
Well, actually, all of the actors that John chooses are very disciplined. He just is attracted to that kind of an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So he uses people who are not professional actors as well, and mixes them, with very well, I think, in a film. But they also are very disciplined.
Well, would you agree with my original statement that
I don't know if I could go along with excessive. I don't know if
creative excess.
Being excessively creative.
Yeah.
I do think that he is abundantly creative. It just pops out all over him.
Mm-hmm.
In many fields, and I assume that's what you mean.
Well, what I'm really saying is he has a reputation. I like Husbands very, very much.
Uh-huh.
And a one under the influence I'm absolutely smitten with. In fact, I talked to somebody locally and told him that he had to bring it, or I'd never write another review for one of his theaters if he didn't bring it to town.
Now that's muscle.
Right. not too often, but on occasion.
That's terrific.
But your performance was the best performance I have seen by a female since Jane Fonda in Clute.
Well, thank you.
And I saw a discipline to it, and I wondered how much his style of directing clashed or was agreeable with how you arrived at that discipline in your performance.
Well, I'll tell you, though John has a very loose feeling on the set,
mm-hmm.
It's not really that loose. It's the only thing that is loose about it is that the atmosphere is created where the actor feels perfect freedom to do anything within what we're doing. It's not improvised. This picture wasn't,
mm-hmm.
And we're all, I think any actor who works with John feels the difference. I'm not very articulate about this, am I? I'm not very articulate.
That's all right, I've hit you with some heavy questions early, and it takes a while to get to know one another, especially over the phone. So we'll come back to that.
All right.
Let me give some specifics. How did you arrive at that gesture and that hissing quality when you were pushing away the world?
I have no idea. I was as surprised as anyone to see it when I first saw it on film. It's just that if you take Mabel Longetti, she's a, talk about inarticulate, she never once expresses her viewpoint or her feelings or her anger or her fright, ever. She never expresses except one time in the picture at the end where she says, "I guess I really am that." And that's the only time she ever mentions anything. So you have
I guess
to,
I really am what?
I don't know if she says nuts or crazy because I haven't seen that scene for a long time. It's after they put the kids to bed and
mm-hmm.
they start walking down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I guess I really am crazy or nuts, I'm not sure which word she used. But the only time that she ever expresses anything that's in it. So you have a case of a woman with enormous frustration and energy. And the energy has to come out somewhere. And in this case, it just spontaneously came out physically in bizarre and sometimes kind of funny, physical.
But it's a gesture that in the sense the character relies upon numerous times in the film, isn't it?
Yes, it's just one of those things that happens.
I mean, it's
that's why it's difficult for me to talk about
right,
the way
sure.
I act, because I don't have a good method to describe.
But it seems a perfect gesture. I mean, wherever you found it, it seems to fit the character and her mood or what she was facing exactly, precisely.
I think it did work out. But, you know, if that's how you're feeling when you're acting, whatever gesture you make is going to do that. If that's how you are feeling at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It did turn out particularly fortuitous, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because it expressed very well what she was thinking.
Yeah, if I had to think about at one moment, that gesture, in a sense, which is her own personal, private, expression of a whole lot of things, frustration, as you say, and that seems to encapsulate it. That seems to capture it.
And her own desire for individuality, even if it's not conscious in her mind, not to get swallowed up and to defy the world and tell them all where they stand, and still she never does it, with her mouth ever.
I guess you've read John Simon's not too complimentary review.
No, I didn't read it.
It's in Esquire, and he says, he asked John Cassavetes at the screening at the New York Film Festival whether this character does change, and John was flustered, and he asked you, do you think it really matters whether she changes or not?
No, he was just interested in that question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she changes very much. I think Nick's character changes. John Simon was, John Simon, I believe, felt that nobody changed.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, I know John very well, and John's relationship with women is not, is kind of like, Nick's.
I didn't really expect him to like the film too well. I'm not surprised to hear he didn't.
Well, as time passes, do you try and as you get further away from the film, do you try and reach a resolution about the character, or has there been any point when you felt it was necessary to figure out for yourself or to think about the future of this character, or did you just play her in the immediate boundaries of the film?
You asked the hardest questions I ever heard in my whole life.
That's because I love this film.
We'll have to break it up into smaller segments, that question.
You're very tired, I imagine.
No, I just really am. I'm not a person that knows how to talk about my acting well.
Mm-hmm.
I never have been able to. I rely so much on instinct that I'm powerless to explain why a lot of things happen later on. Of course I look back on it. And of course it's much easier to see now why, certain things happen. And naturally, while I'm acting too, I realize that certain things must happen. But mostly I just immerse myself in the character, which all actors do to some degree, but some people have more technical ability. And almost anybody has more ability to talk about it than I do.
but it seems like you've met this very interesting person, and you would try, even in retrospect, to figure her out, to figure Mabel out.
Yeah.
I don't mean me, I mean you.
That's true. Of course I would. Of course. And I still think about it, and I wonder if things are going well for her, and I worry about it, and I always will, I'm sure.
What do you think? Do you think things are going well for her?
I think so.
You really do?
Mm-hmm.
I hope so.
I do. I think that Nick's character changes, and that since she bases her entire life on him and his love for her, whatever kind of love, however emotionally ignorant it may be, whatever, still that's what she bases everything on. And I think he comes to a realization while she's awake of how much he really does care for her.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but he doesn't know how to express it.
No, he doesn't know how to express it. And probably never will, but she's remarkably attuned to it. And I think senses any change or feels any, it wouldn't even have to be much of a change on Nick's part, you know? I don't think she's ever going to be your normal next door liberated woman. I don't, you know, she's Mabel.
Right.
And she's just as she is. And I don't think everything's going to get peaceful and left either.
Would she ever, I suppose she wouldn't, but would she ever tell Nick that she has slept with another man?
I don't think she admitted to herself.
She just did it. Why did she do it?
Why did people do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. To hurt both the other person and themselves, I guess.
Just, yes, everything. You know, the enormous frustration. And, but I don't think she ever would admit it to herself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think when the mother says that she brought a man in this house, you know, during that scene, that she was really outraged. By their mother, you know, lying, and her mother-in-law lying like that. But goodbye, sweetheart. Have a good day. My little girl went to school. But I really think it's interesting, and it almost has nothing to do with Nick, you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And
can
the audience accepts that so very well.
But can a woman compartmentalize? Isn't that more a man's? A man can sleep with another woman, and it doesn't really matter. But can a woman do that?
Well, I don't think that. I'm not even sure that a man can do that. I think it does matter, and it's with Mabel. It's part of the disintegrating psyche. But I think that she's so heavily into it that it's not a case where it's nothing. It's a case where it's so bad that she won't even admit it to herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think she totally blocks it.
I have another question along this line of male versus female psychology. I love the scene where Nick takes the kids out to the beach and says, "Have fun, damn it, have fun."
Oh, no. Yeah.
Is that a male thing, do you think? Or I know it's in me.
I think it's the most, everyone loves that scene. I think it's the most human thing in the world. Men aren't around kids a lot. They have no idea really what goes into it. And, I mean, they can't be. I'm not criticizing them.
Mm-hmm.
God knows Nick wasn't out running around with redheads. He was out working like a dog. But I feel that that scene is so touching because any man looking in knows if his wife was suddenly taken out of there and he was stuck with his kids, what he wants is for him to have fun and be happy, but he hasn't any idea how to do it, or he hasn't caught up with it in years, you know, and so he just figures out it some way that he's determined that they'll be happy.
Right. Well, that's the motivation for him having all those people around Mabel's coming home, because he thinks that will initially make her happy, and then realizes, of course, it's a mistake, doesn't he?
Sure, and I think he's scared to see her. You know, I think he's guilty about having sent her away, about having let her slip out of his
hands.
And
control,
he postpones the moment. I've heard talk about looking back at a picture and thinking about things like that. I'm not sure, but that party would have been a good idea.
Don't you think it would have been too much, right?
Well, everyone says it was, but I don't know how much more it could be than what she actually went through with the family. You know, knowing that family was going to be there, I think I'd just as soon have had the party.
Right, but there are different kinds of humiliation, aren't there? And I think when you're humiliated before almost strangers. It's you have the personal or the private humiliation, and you also have the public humiliation. I sure wouldn't want a party if I came home from that situation.
Well, and most people consider it just utterly appalling and insensitive on his part, but I always find it, personally, I always think it's kind of touching.
Well, I do too, because he's trying at least. He's trying to do something, he just doesn't know how.
And Mabel lives with humiliation. Anyway, I mean, like she says in that scene where I thought John had such wonderful dialogue, right before she's committed, she says, look, I'm not sore at you, you know, you just made a jerk of yourself. And I make a jerk of myself every day. That's not a big deal, you know? But of course, that's the one thing you can't tell a guy. And not many women can you tell that either. But she was familiar and easy with it. I think she did believe that she made a jerk of herself, and I think she did a great deal of her life and was used to living with it. But, I don't know, I just loved her so.
Have you ever read Philip Roth's Letting Go?
I'm sorry?
Philip Roth's Letting Go novel?
Oh, no.
Letting Go. Because it's very much like this picture. It has a character who is confused and trying to find the order and the meaning and the quality of her life. And as you read it, you say, oh, don't do it again. Don't do it one more. I can't stand it. And she does it anyway, you know.
Well,
let me ask you another question. Great acting, I think, is risk taking. What risks did you take? Do you think in
oh well
in
every risk I know how I think I took in this.
That's why the performance is so good.
It's very scary to take really big risks because you really can land on your bottom and very easily. And I was, half of the time I wanted very much not to just have a droopy kind of nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
Because I have noticed with my friends who have nervous breakdowns, and God knows we all have ample, people to draw on by now, that not everybody goes the same way.
Yeah.
And yet in movies, it's almost always portrayed very quietly and dirty and always the same way. And I wanted a specific character, a specific breakdown, a specific thing for this woman, something her own. And what was the question?
Well, I was asking about the risks you took, and you're talking about one of the risks is portraying a breakdown in a very personal way.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact.
What kind of I really don't...
I'll tell you, do you know what's a risk? It's right in the middle of a nervous breakdown is to put your fingers in the cross and try to back a doctor down as a vampire. You know? Now, because you have to go on from there, you know. If it turns into a certain kind of loss, you can't go on from there.
Right. Was that an impulse, or was that written, or?
Oh, it was that, I can't remember. I think that was written. I'm sure. I can't remember.
Sure.
I think it was written.
But it still is risky.
Whether it's written or not, it doesn't make any difference about the risk. Anytime you open yourself so many emotions up to view and leave them all open, that's a big risk. And just making a picture about that is emotional is a big risk because people have been through this in their lives, you know. I was very surprised at how successful it is because it's a tough picture to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think there'd be as many people as there are willing to take it. And when I hear some people who've been 4 or 5 times, I don't know how they could do it. I really don't know how they could do it. But I think it I think the audience has changed a lot since a few years ago. And I don't think this picture probably would have been as successful 5 years ago. Because at that time it seems that people really were rejecting any kind of emotion at all.
Mm-hmm.
And film. And they seem to just be coming around to a different... Personally, I don't consider it depressing to go... It depresses me when I go to a picture and I don't feel anything. Then I really am depressed to go to just a gangster film or, CIA film or something. I really feel depressed by those. But it doesn't depress me to go and cry and laugh and cry some more.
Right.
At a picture.
Well, this film, like, you know, I teach at the university out here, and we've done Virginia Woolf, which has a small bit of hope at the end of it, although they clash and they have the illusions all through the play. At the end, they no longer have their illusions, and they have to make human contact. And so many films today, that possibility of human contact is dead at the end of Godfather 2, of Chinatown. It's dead. But at the end of your film, it's still alive.
Yes. I think that's very important.
And so humanity is still breathing. And I know when I left the theater, I felt that I had been through an experience, but I didn't feel that I had been through I don't know whether pessimistic is the right word, but I didn't feel like I had been through a nihilistic experience.
Right. Yes, that's really very accurate report. That's right.
Okay, what kind of... It really doesn't matter to me what kind of research you did, because I think it's a human character, but basically what kind of research did you do, if any?
Just the normal research. You mean, did I go to any institutions or anything? I tell you the truth, I don't have to look that far away. There's a great deal of myself and Mabel, and there's a great deal of my bits and pieces of my friends and family and people I have loved.
Mm.
And I don't think she's that far away from a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most women. She's just a little more extreme. But anybody who has loved anybody knows, at least in part, at least a little percentage of the decisions of how much of yourself you give away and what he loves about you, what you do that, you know, there's an examination there, and there's a dividing up. Well, Mabel goes way over, but it's not a problem that the rest of us don't know about and haven't participated in some way. And of course, being an actress, I naturally, you know, as an actor, you always, always have your tape recorder on watching people. So that a lot of those gestures and stuff, I'm sure have come, not the one that we're speaking of before, mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing that particular one, but when she was actually breaking down and stuff, I have
witnessed
often
that.
That people do that very often, that sort of spastic pushing and with their hands above their head up a lot and
mm-hmm.
in front of their face and guarding themselves and you know, I've noticed that I've seen that more than once and under very cool circumstances with friends of mine. And so there are certain just technical things like that come up, but I didn't do any really unusual study.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an unusual character, but not really that unusual.
I have a theory that much of great acting has a demonic quality to it. And you certainly know the film The Strange One with Ben Gazzara.
Yes.
Where I just love him in that.
Yeah, he was wonderful.
And I wish I saw him on the stage in Night Circus. I saw him years ago when I really thought that he was going to be the greatest actor of our time, or you know. And Arthur Hill has it, and I think that you in this another worldly quality, an exploratory quality. I can't I don't know whether there's any answer to this. I don't even know whether this is a question, but I'm saying...
I don't think so. It's an interesting observation.
But there's a demonic quality in so much of great acting. You know.
I have to think about that.
And I think that that's in this role. At least I found it in this role. The tried and true question is about the Oscars. Now, as we are getting closer, it's only today's Thursday, next Tuesday. What's your feeling about it? It's not a stupid question. Let me ask you. Do you think you win?
No.
You don't think you win?
No, I don't think
you think
I
Ellen Burstyn will win?
Or perhaps fate.
Why don't you think you win?
Because, I'm not, it's not a studio picture. And, the studios still have a great deal of clout. And that, they have a lot of votes.
Right.
And, you know, but it would have to be a you know, very unusual circumstance for me to actually win it.
Do you have, what do I want to say? Enough information that you are pretty sure in this judgment?
You can't ever be sure, but you can look at, you know, most of the history of it, and it's always pretty well been that way. The people who have actually been voted, but, you know, it's possible.
Right. I had heard when you got the nomination that you were happy with it. Is that true or not?
I was delighted with it. I still am. Very happy with it. It was voted by actors.
Right. Right. Yeah. I guess you heard Diane Carroll talk about your performance on Johnny Carson.
No, I heard everybody telling me that, but I missed it myself. I told her, I got off. Couple of days later, I said, if you don't quit talking about people, I never have seen anyone so generous in my life.
Yes.
I mean, considering she's nominated,
right. No, in effect, she said, yes, I was good, but this person was brilliant, you know.
I've never heard another actress
that
generous.
No. I thought that maybe you would win if enough people saw the film in the Academy because, you know, as one who has seen all five performances, there's no question in my mind that yours is the most creative, explosive, savage, touching, tender, whatever word you want to use. But I would imagine that many more people have seen Ellen Burstyn's.
Well, I don't think so, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
Well, I think you know, I could choose. It's hard to say out here, but we ran here, you know, oh, a long time, and in the one theater we just closed, the first theater, and we're playing every place here.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh, and it's doing fabulous business. So I think...
Oh, that's good.
I think it's been very heavily seen, really.
Oh, well, then...
They
then
don't vote for me, it's just because they don't want to.
I really can't believe that they haven't seen it. I'm sure they have seen it. It's played a long time here. It's a very good business, and it's still playing in the suburbs. Maybe you're like me, that you say it's not going to work out, and it's not going to work out, and if it works out, wonderful.
Yes, I too. I wouldn't consider myself the all-time positive thinker on this sort of thing. But you have to be practical. When you get down to, everybody knows that a nominee, an actual winning of an Academy Award brings $1 million into your box office. In either the best picture, the best actor, or the best actress category. Well, I mean, nominations are one thing, because, and they're wonderful too, for business too, but all the studios want that business. You know, they're going to spend their best efforts to get it.
Right.
And they have a lot of votes. So I don't think they're going to go off sentimental or anything when it comes down to that. Still, as these days, anything is possible. And I certainly,
Right. You didn't have a big part in, I think, I'm Lonely or the Brave, did you?
No, it was Beyond the Woman stuff, but it wasn't a large part. It was just a few scenes, but terrific scenes. That's what, it was really a lovely movie. Did you see it?
Oh, sure, and in fact, it's going to be on at 3:15 Saturday night.
Oh, really?
In this area. Oh, I've seen it several times.
Yeah.
David Miller directed
right.
it. Whatever happened to him? Didn't
yeah,
he do
I was
that?
Going to ask you, you know, I was looking for him the other day, and nobody knew who he was. No, someone said maybe they thought he was living in England.
Didn't he direct that film on the Kennedy assassination last year?
That
was.
Was that David?
I think so. It wasn't well received at all.
But it was his.
You know the one, I mean?
Oh, about President Kennedy.
Yeah. Well, I forget the name of it, but I think that was Miller. I'm pretty sure.
Uh-huh. I didn't see it.
And that's completely different from what he did,
yeah.
Although he wasn't too subtle with those toilets. But
no, no, it's true. You look back and you realize how much subtlety films have attained. Whenever you look back, no matter how good a picture it is, it's always amazing at the where pictures have gone.
So you think that, I'm not putting words in your mouth, do you think the films are as subtle as they've ever been today?
Oh yes, I think they're getting, well I don't know if that I would say, now we're doing subtlety, you have to get to, no, I imagine, I think that the European films are more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
But subtlety isn't everything.
But it's an awful lot.
But not everything.
It's an awful lot.
I mean, sometimes but sometimes, you know, I mean, some of the British comedies are very, very
oh, sure.
Cheap,
sure.
They out-subtle themselves.
So, have you seen Shampoo?
No, I haven't seen it.
The obvious things in that picture are terrible, and the subtleties are the things that save it.
Yeah.
The things that you think about, you think about the subtleties. You don't think about the obvious things. You know.
They talk about the obvious things.
Yes, right. Yes, and they put the obvious things in quotation marks and use them in the ads.
Right.
And they call Shampoo a comedy or a farce when that's only one element in 25 of it.
Right.
You know. So I don't want to hold any. Well, how whose children were they?
Did you see Minnie Moscow?
I have to confess that I didn't. Yes.
Seymour Cassell, who played Moscow.
Right.
The blonde boy was his, Matthew. The little girl was Angelo Grisanti, the guy that went with Peter to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And was talking about his brother was a communist and stuff.
Yeah.
That's his little girl. And the little banana is Matthew Labateau, who's a professional actor.
And was it the little banana that made the fist?
Yeah.
I guess that's another another surefire scene that people love.
I love that. All those kids are, children are the greatest natural actors in the world, aren't they?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've got two, and they're acting all the time.
You grow out of being able to act, but it's because they all start out knowing that.
Yeah. Well, I.
How old are your kids?
What?
How old are your kids?
11 and 9. And my boy is. Oh, I coach him in basketball. I coach him in baseball. In fact, we were 18-1 last year, and he was 9-0 from the pitcher's mound. And I wound up having an attack and wound up in the hospital for 11 days.
What
kind of attack? No, a stroke. A minor stroke. They don't know
that
what.
That you're so excited you just collapsed.
Absolutely.
Oh, you're
pretty. That's
my house. John and Nick doing the same thing, except it's basketball here.
Oh, well, basketball we love. That's our major sport.
Oh, that's our major sport.
We've got a net right outside,
okay.
And last night he and a boyfriend beat me 3 games, and then the boyfriend went home, and I really put it on him, and after 10 points he quit. So I don't even get that achievement of beating an 11-year-old.
I know, and really 15 like ours is not. They're even worse.
How do I send what I'm going to do to you?
Just send it to our home.
Okay, what's the address?
7917.
Woodrow Wilson Drive. Right.
Los Angeles
9046. Well, I really appreciate this, and thank you. And
I know I'm hard going as an interview.
Oh, no. Anybody who's honest and anybody who's sincere is not hard.
Well,
the only kind of interview that's hard is when a person lies to you, you know. And, you know, you don't interview those kind of people.
Better not.
Right. But, no, you haven't been hard at all.
Well,
thank you for your graciousness.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you.
Bye-bye.